Ladies and gentlemen, we're at study two, and the outline for that is on page 5. We say, what is holiness? Well, briefly, it's growing like Christ. That's what it is. Now, how does God go about bringing this to pass? So this one's called, how does it progress? It's a great mistake to think because you've grown old, you therefore are mature in the Christian life. Maturity in the Christian life's got nothing to do with growing old. You can be in your prime and be mature, according to the Apostle Paul, and I'll put my money on him. That's a very bad illustration, isn't it? I'll go with him. I think that's what it means. Okay, now how do we make progress? Hebrews 12 is a very good little guide. A lot of the Bible is spent in telling you how to make progress. And in Hebrews 12, he does a really good job at telling us the plans, the way God goes about bringing us to be Christ-like. He starts by saying, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, he's gone in chapter 11 to tell us all the people of faith, the people who trusted God even when the promise was teeny-weeny. They didn't know very much, but they still followed the light they had, but not with us. And he said, we're surrounded by this great crowd of faithful people. He said, here's some advice. And the first one is, let's throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let's fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition for sinful men, so that you do not grow weary or lose heart. Now, there's nothing worse than the Christians who've grown weary and lose heart. So he says, I don't want you to be like that. And you don't want to be like it either. Because it's the pits when you've grown weary. I can tell you that. And you say the Christian life's an endless drag. Well, it's not meant to be an endless drag, and here's a cure for it. Because if it's a drag day in, day out, day in, day out, and you say, oh, geez, I don't know if it was worth ever making the decision. If it's like that, can I say, Hebrews is a good remedy for you. And the remedy, he says, are threefold. He likens the Christian life to a race. A great friend of mine, when the Olympics were on in Sydney, his girl said to him, we want to be athletes. What they really wanted to do was stand on the podium and hear the anthem played and get the flowers and the medal. They said, we want to be athletes. He said, good, we'll go to Little Athletics on Saturday. So they fronted up to Little Athletics and they signed up and paid their money for a term. And the girls were sent to run round the oval. Well, they didn't think that was so crash hot. And when they came back, they were sent to do it again. They could hardly believe it. Then they exercised like mad, and then they ran round the oval again at the end of the day. And after 3 weeks, they said to him, we don't want to be athletes anymore. Now, the Christian life is likened to a race, not a sprint, a marathon. Can you believe this? I heard on the news coming over, because you hear a lot of the news coming over from Kirrawee to here. It takes you quite a time. So I heard the news several times. There's an old codger in Japan who's running today his 52nd marathon, and he's done one each day for 52 weeks. for 52 days. He's running. I think he needs an examination. I won't tell you what sort of examination I think. But he said his feet were a wee bit sore. Mine? Be impossible. Anyway, but this Christian life is the marathon. And he says, when God called you to be Christ-like, you started out on the marathon. He said, three pieces of advice. If you're running the marathon, make sure you've got the right gear to start with. Don't put on your overcoat to run the marathon. I always think of this. The first time I went overseas, I took everything and the kitchen sink. You know, will I need cold weather gear, warm weather gear? How much will I need? And so, because they weighed your luggage, I wore my overcoat and I stuffed into it underwear and socks. Well, at the best of time, I looked like Billy Bunter. But when I put this in, I was an exact replica of Billy Bunter. I was almost like Rita Hunter. Have you ever seen Rita Hunter? She's spherical in shape. She just goes that way and that way. She does have a beautiful voice. And she is a great, for those of you who don't know, she's a great Wagnerian soprano. And somebody said, well, what do you think is the best thing a Wagnerian soprano needs? She said, make sure your shoes fit properly. You're on them for a long time in Wagner. And that's absolutely dead right. You know, a friend of mine had a walk-on, walk-off part in the Master Singers, and I fronted to the opera house to see him walk on and walk off. You know what time he walked on? Midnight. Midnight. I'd been there since 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock. And listening to Wagner arias one after the other. And since I don't have any German, I hadn't the faintest idea what they were talking about. And then at midnight, my mate walked on. And at 12:02, he walked off again. I tell you, well, that's got nothing to do. Don't put your overcoat on. Don't put your overcoat on if you're going to run a marathon. So he said, trim down and trim off everything that hinders being Christ-like. He's going to go on in this chapter to talk about God's disciplining of us. And training's a better word. Discipline always sounds like punishment, doesn't it? Discipline's what you do to kids who've mucked up at school. But the discipline he's talking about is discipline for running a marathon. And he said God is in the business of disciplining, of training us for this work. So he says the first thing is, get rid of everything that hinders you. Now I can't name the things in your life which get in the way of you growing like Christ. But it'll surprise me if you don't recognise them. And he says, get rid of them. Now, sometimes they might be good things, but they're just not good for you. And they're just not good for you at this time. So he says, throw them away. See, there's nothing wrong with going down to the snow to ski for the weekend. But if it means you can't teach your Sunday school class, you don't have to be a genius to work out what should go. You see, our great problem is we live in a massively affluent time, and affluence widens your choices, doesn't it? You see, 50 years ago, you would never have thought of going to the opera more than once a year if you were lucky. Now you say, will I buy a season ticket? You see? No, I'm saying it's not wrong. I'm just saying it might get in the way. It can be a good thing and get in the way. See, it's a big mistake to say, well, there's nothing wrong with it, I can do it. He's saying, well, it depends what it does to your training. You see? And so he says, get rid of everything that hinders. And then, and throw off the sin which so easily entangles. Now, how would you go about throwing it off? If you know you're likely to trip up, don't get near it. Don't get near it. Because it's a serious business. You see, you want to stand on the podium at the end. You've got to keep in training. And one of the things I think that's happened in our age is we've lost sight of the podium. It's become all clouded. And we don't realise where we're heading. And it's easily in our age to get distracted. You see, I had to write to Mr. Rudd recently and tell him, I thanked him for the $1,400 he'd given me. And I told him that I'd spent it before it came, and I spent it when it came, and I've spent it subsequently. And I can be thoroughly trusted to kick along the economy. And would he like me to give me some more? I said, I didn't bank it. I didn't bank it like my friends who can't be trusted, but I can be trusted. Please give me some more. And you know what he answered? He said, we're always glad to hear from Australian citizens. Do you reckon it's pinned up in the Treasury, my letter? I bet it is. I bet it is. Okay. You know the sin that easily entangles you. Don't get anywhere near it. Take all the steps to avoid it. Okay? And run with perseverance the race that is set before you. Now, that must say to you, this is a week in, week out, year out thing. Don't grow weary. Because if you take your eyes off the podium, it's going to be too hard. Now, I've got a friend who competes in triathlons. I mean, honestly, that's a death wish within itself, isn't it? Don't you reckon? You've got no idea what his training program's like. Monday morning, for 2 hours, he runs up hills. That's all he does. He runs up hills to strengthen those calf muscles or whatever they are. Then in the evening, he swims for an hour. Up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Not in the slow lane where I walk. Not in that one. In the one that's going flat to the boards. All right? Comes Tuesday, he gets on the bike for 2 hours in the morning again. Tuesday evening, he just runs for 2 hours. And on and on and on it goes. And guess how he fills in Saturday, which is my day off. 20 kilometres bike ride every Saturday morning. You say, how ever does he do that? And look, honestly, at the end of 20 k's, you say, did you enjoy the ride? He enjoys when it's finished. He said, for goodness sake, why do you torture yourself like this, mate? He said, you'll never win if you don't train, chapo. It's as simple as that. Okay? Now, the training, he says, by the way, I'm over the hymns now. Skip the hymns. You don't need to read those now. Go over to page 6. He says, keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your eyes on Jesus. That's the goal for which you're heading, and he is also a good example. Did he give up? No. Did he find it easy to die and rise again for us? No. You've only got to go to the Garden of Gethsemane. He said, look at Jesus. He's a good example to follow, isn't he? Right through to the end. Right through to the end. And thank God he didn't give up, because you and I couldn't be forgiven, could we? So it's as simple as that. He didn't give up. He said, he's a good role model, and he's also the goal to which we're travelling. Now, of course, if you forget about Jesus, how can you keep your eye on him? By reading the Gospels. That's how you'll keep your eye on him. I've embarked on a Bible reading program. It's just about laid me low. Our assistant minister put us all on read the Bible in 12 months. Why is it better for me to read it in 12 months than 2 years? Goodness only knows. But I've started off on it. So on the program, I read half of Matthew, half a chapter of Matthew, a chapter of Acts, one psalm, and 6 chapters of the Old Testament. Well, that's a good way of making sure I never learn anything, isn't it? Well, talk about a dopey Bible reading program. I mean, imagine getting a letter one day, a big fat letter, and you read page 1, page 9, and the last page. So I want to make it last. I said, you've got to be crackers, surely. So I scrapped that. So I read 4 days of Matthew till I finished Matthew. Then I come back and read 4 days of Acts. When I get to the Old Testament, I've got to read 12 chapters of Genesis. Boy, that's been a marathon, I can tell you that. Well, anyway, I had to hurry like mad to get to the end of February. So I read through to the end of Leviticus. And that's hard going at 5 chapters a day. I've never had so many sacrifices. So I get to the end of Leviticus and put the last tick in the box and discover it's March I've finished and not February. I'm a month in front. So goodness knows what I'll do now. So I think I'll keep ploughing on, and then when I've finished it, I'll send it to the assistant minister and say, would you like to give me advice as to the rest of my Bible reading for the year, or can I knock off? Well, of course you can't knock off. The way to find out what Jesus is like is keep reading the Gospels. Go back over Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. Then go back to Matthew again. Don't only read those. But so you've got a good, clear, rounded picture of what Jesus is like. So you'll know how to behave. He says, fix your eyes on Jesus. Now he said, Jesus went right through to the end. Verse 3, consider whom endured such opposition for sinful men, so that you will not grow weary or lose heart. Now there's an antidote to growing weary and losing heart. Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. All right? Not some airy-fairy mystical nonsense, but the real Jesus that you find when you meet Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. Of course, that is the way to encounter God. See, it's interesting. Our confirmation candidates all were examined publicly, to their great surprise and ours. So in front of the congregation, before they were confirmed, the person who prepared them examined them publicly before us. And he said to them, why do you read the Bible? To a man, they said, because we find out information about God so we can serve him properly. So I said to the man who trained them, since that was the right answer, so far as he was concerned, I said, when are you most conscious that you are in the presence of God? He said, when I'm saying my prayers. Well, I said, isn't that interesting? You're most conscious of God when you're talking. Is that right? Did I get you correctly? He laughed and said, oh, chapo, that can't be right, can it? I said, God bless you for seeing it, mate. No, it's not the time you ought to be most conscious you're in the presence of God when you're studying the Bible, because that's where God is speaking. If you want to be in the presence of the speaking God, you encounter him in the pages of the Bible. That's why you read the Bible. You don't read the Bible to gather up info so you can live a proper Christian life. You go to the Bible to meet with God. And no better than to meet with God where he's talking. Okay, so he says, fix your eyes on Jesus. Okay, verse 4. In your struggle against sin, you haven't resisted to the point of death. You haven't shed your blood, you wouldn't be here. Okay, at least you haven't had that happen to you. So it could be worse. And you have forgotten the word of encouragement that addresses you, my sons. Do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. The Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everybody he accepts as a son. So he said, if you're finding life difficult, he said, don't kick the cat. Know that God is using it to make you Christ-like. So he says, endure hardship. Okay, just remember the man puffing up the hill every Monday morning. Puffing up the hill every Monday morning. Why? Because he wants to win on the marathon. And if you say, well, just the Christian life's like puffing up the hill every Monday for me, well, I'm saying, aren't you a lucky person? Shows you've got God on your side. He's put you into training. Okay? Now, he goes on to say, and I'll quickly summarise it, it's because you're children and you're going to inherit a great inheritance and you're getting ready to be able to administer your inheritance properly. If you were illegitimate and you were getting nothing in the will, well, you can do whatever you like. Who gives a fig about you? But you're not. You're heirs to a great inheritance. And because you are, God is treating you like a child and an heir. All right? Now, you mightn't have thought about that. And if you haven't thought about it, it wouldn't be a bad idea to put your mind on it now. You see, it's because of your great future that God is taking you in hand. I don't have great wealth, and I didn't inherit great wealth. My father said to me, when he'd made out his will, he said, there isn't anything to leave you, but it doesn't matter. I didn't have anything when I started, and I'm leaving you what I had. Nothing. And good luck. You see, I haven't inherited great wealth, but I have friends in Britain who own a vast estate. And the lady of this house said to me, our son Alexander, on his 18th birthday, will inherit a fortune big enough to buy and sell us over again. And we don't have all that much time to train him so that he doesn't squander it. And so that he uses it wisely. She said, 10 to 18, 8 years we've got, and we're making every effort to teach him how to have vast wealth and still be a godly man. Now, God has got great wealth in store for you. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor has it entered into the heart of man what God has prepared for those who love him. And he's getting you ready to inherit the great inheritance. I mean, television's a wonderful place, isn't it? You can see all those people who won the lottery and went berserk. Because they'd never had any training to handle this vast amount of money. A little man in India, I don't know if you saw him, but he won the English lottery, which is fabulous. Millions. And he said, I discovered that I was related to every second man in India. What would you do if you inherited a vast fortune? Are you equipped for it? Well, God said, I've got a vast fortune in store for you. You see, the healthy, wealthy and wise people are right. You are going to be healthy, wealthy and wise, but not yet. A kid said to me in Africa on the Johannesburg Wits University, Doc Dollars had just visited the place. And this young man said to me, do you think God wants me to be wealthy? Well, I said, I've never been asked that question before. I said, if God made you wealthy, could he trust you to give the money away to the poor? And for the spread of the gospel, could he trust you to do that? He said, no. I said, well, I think you'll be like me, mate. You'll just make it through life, because you can't be trusted with vast wealth. But I've got friends in England who are enormously wealthy. And their benefaction I find all over the world. There's a man doing gospel ministry in Cape Town. When I stayed with him, he had to sleep on a mattress in the lounge room. They didn't have a spare room. Next time I went, he had a house with a spare room and a spare sitting room. I said, how'd you come by this? I said, it's from the benefaction of. And he named my friend in England. And my friend said to me, how's he supposed to do gospel ministry in that pokey hole? He can never have people back to entertain them. Of course he's got to have a proper house. I said, when are you going to retire? He said, never. Because he said, I've got to administer these funds which Christian people have given me for the spread of the gospel. Now, you'd give him money if you had it, wouldn't you? I mean, if you were God, you'd keep giving him money, wouldn't you? And if you're hard up today, it might be because you can't be trusted. I don't know. I'm not God. But God says, I've got you in training. And I'm disciplining you because you will inherit a great fortune. All right? So 12, therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet. He said, don't make it hard for yourself. Find the easiest way to be obedient and do it. So that the lame may not be disabled, I like that bit, but rather healed. Make every effort to live in peace. I'm at verse 14. And be at peace. I'm saying, make every effort, live at peace with all men, and be holy. Without holiness, no one will see to the Lord. Okay? And then he goes on to give very, very good advice about the training program that you need to undertake. Now, nobody would dream of going in the marathon without at least doing some training. When I was in Canberra last, which is where my family lives, my brother and his two boys, and the boys are no longer boys, 60 and 58. 60 and 58. Alan is in training, he's 60, because they are going to run a 4 kilometre charity run. Bruce is also going to run at 58, but he's not in training. And Jim said, last time you did it, you collapsed, you stupid man. Either get into training or get out of the race. You see, and there's a sense in which it's like that. Keep on the training program. Don't get sick of it. There's a great destiny waiting. Keep your eyes on Jesus or you'll lose heart. Let's have a look at 12:16. See that no one is sexually immoral or godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance. Afterwards, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. He couldn't bring himself to change his mind, though he sought the blessing with tears. He wanted to stand on the podium. He just couldn't stomach the training program. Okay, now our age's a dopey age. If it takes longer than 5 minutes to do it, you say it can't be worth doing. You have instant everything, but you can't run an instant marathon. That's all there is about it. Okay? You didn't make a mistake when you enrolled in the Christian life, and you haven't made a mistake. It was the best thing you ever did, and the end is going to be breathtaking. And that's a story for after lunch. But there is time for a question if I answer it quickly. If that's a big if. Okay? So do you want to ask a question? I should not drop that on the deck quickly. Yes. Will you do it with a big voice, brother, because I'm as deaf as a beetle? Yep. But they're not good enough, are they? No, they're not. But they are good. Please don't misunderstand me. Nothing is better than having your sins forgiven. Nothing is better than the fellowship of God's people. Nothing is better than knowing you've got Christ with you and his Spirit. And every now and again, you see a miracle. And you say, well, God bless me. Fancy that. I said my prayers about it and it happened. Fancy that. And they're great, dear brother. Thank you for that. Because I tend to go overboard on the discipline bit and the chugging up the hill. But it is good. It is good. And if you keep your eyes on the end, it's even better. Yeah, thanks for that. Anybody else? There's time for another one if I answer. Yes, go big voice. No, you're saying finish, are you? No, just having doing aerobics? Somebody over here? Yeah, go for it, mate. All the time. But it starts somewhere. And every other time is like the first one. See, what did I say in the first one? I said, you're God and I'm not. You're big and I'm little. You're pure and I'm not. And I'm going to do what you tell me to do. Then next time when I've blown it, I say, oh, geez, I'm stupid because I said I was going to do what you told me to do. Well, sorry about that. Let's get back on again. So every time is like the first time. But the first time's got to be somewhere. You don't just sort of grow into it. You make a decision, and it's a way of life that I've opted in for, as trusting God is. And trusting's easier than doing it, isn't it? Yeah. See, I think of that story of the storm at sea, waves everywhere, the fishermen are about to drown, Jesus stopped down, it's a great calm, they're all goggle-eyed saying, who is this, the wind and the waves obey him? And Jesus, the sharp rebuke, he said, what's the matter with you? Why didn't you trust me? That's a pretty big ask, isn't it? My doctor phoned me, my GP, and he said, hey John, we've got the results of your pathology. Do you want to get in the car and come over and see me? I said, is it not good news, Neil? He said, don't waste time, mate, just come. As I put the key in the car, I said, why are you so frightened? Why don't you trust me? See, if it doesn't work, then it's not worth a bumper, is it? It's easier to talk about than it is to do, but it's ongoing too. Every new situation, I've got to trust God. It's time to stop.